This report was brought to you by our good friends at River. Want to do mining? Talking about mining, River makes it very easy to mine in a professional way. You go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account. You go to river.com/mining after that, and you can pick an ASIC. They have many ASICs for sale. Some are already plugged in with hosting contracts, so you can buy an ASIC and lock in a hosting contract immediately. You purchase it, you're already up and hashing and sats are streaming to your River account, whether you're an individual or a larger institution that wants to mine a lot. River is here to help you. They have a white glove professional service that'll walk you through the process, that'll get you set up. Or if you don't want them to walk you through the process, you can just go through the website, through the app, and do it without having to talk to anybody. Which I shouldn't say, I'm not certain, but maybe you do have to talk to somebody. But point is, it's a great way to mine. You're doing it the right way. So go check it out. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up an account today. ASICs are cheap. Still cheap. Still in the bear market. It's a good time. About 11 months out from the halving. So get all those sats with 6.25 block subsidy rewards while you can. river.com/TFTC. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. They're here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody model. They're building a Bitcoin financial institution the right way by leveraging Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their vault product is a 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet. It allows you to hold 2 keys and Unchained to hold 1. You eliminate single points of failure in this model. Since you hold 2 keys, you control the Bitcoin in the vault at any given point in time. But if you're ever in a pinch, Unchained is there to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum. Beyond that, they have their trading desk. If you want to buy Bitcoin and send it straight to your vault after you have it set up, Unchained's the best place to do it. You can do it all in one place. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin in bulk. You buy and it goes straight to cold storage. On top of that, they have their lending desk, their IRA, their inheritance protocol, again, all revolving around native multi-sig properties that Bitcoin has that reduces single points of failure. It is the future. Go to unchained.com. Tell them the TFTC sent you. Talk to their concierge team. They'll walk you through everything I just described. This rip is also brought to you by our good friends at CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is here to help you bring sovereignty back to your healthcare and how you pay for it. Incumbent health insurance is notoriously opaque, expensive, impersonal. CrowdHealth is the complete opposite. It's cheaper, it's transparent, and it's very personal. You get a personal health advocate once you get onboarded to CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's crowdfunded healthcare. So the way it works is you become a member, and then when you have to go to the doctor, you let CrowdHealth know, hey, I'm going to go to the doctor. They'll either help you find one or connect to your doctor that you're going to. Once you go to the doctor, you get the bill. You bring it back to CrowdHealth. They negotiate the bill lower with the doctor, and then you pay the first $500 of that bill, and the rest gets crowdfunded by the CrowdHealth community. Me and my family are on this. We've used this. It works flawlessly. And again, it's cheaper because you have metrics that you have to meet to get into the CrowdHealth community. It's a relatively healthier community of individuals. And so overall healthcare costs for the CrowdHealth community are lower. So you're paying less than you would with insurance. So if you're on COBRA, any of that stuff, consider CrowdHealth. Go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC. Sign up today and get a deal on your membership fees for the first 6 months. This report was also brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. It's a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. If you're a company in the space looking to hire the best talent in the world, go get set up with Bitcoin Talent Co. They'll understand your needs, what you are looking for, what your company does. Again, it's a recruiting firm by Bitcoiners, so they understand the difference between multi-sig, mining, Lightning. They actually understand Bitcoin, so you're not just spraying and praying with a random recruiter to hope that they can actually understand what you need. Bitcoin Talent Co. will understand, already does understand. Likewise, if you are talent stranded in big tech, big banking, big finance, you're a Bitcoiner looking to get into the space, set up a profile with Bitcoin Talent Co. Go to bitcointalent.co. To do all this, tell them the TFTC sent you and enjoy this rip.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free. If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Pod three of the day, Michael.
Oh, oof. It's been a good day.
It's been a great day. Pod one for you, Andy.
Pod one, the endurance is, I commend you guys.
This first two pods were fun, and I'm actually really looking forward to this conversation, too. We did the last trade that rolled into Rabbit Hole Recap. A blending of those two shows. Matt joined us late on the last trade, and then we just rolled the whole crew.
You would think we get tired of talking about this stuff. I mean, we did this all day yesterday, the night before with Parker, dinner.
Well, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I think we have a lot of range across the shows that we do. You know, this is TFTC, Rabbit Hole Recap. We talked about Binance. Last trade, we talked about value investing. We're here today to catch up with the Bitcoin Talent Code team and, I guess, to co-announce the new product that you guys are launching with Flex and talk about something really interesting, not only the product, but the nature of the just company construction and how business owners, CEOs should be thinking about building teams in this interesting macro environment.
To say the least. Yeah.
So before we dive into Flex, I guess, last time we spoke was during the Bitcoin takeover in March when you guys originally launched. So we're, 6 months later? How's the first half year been?
Yeah, it's, man, I can't believe it's been only 5 months ago. It feels like a whole lifetime since then. But yeah, a lot's actually been happening. I'm really excited to say that we, as a team, ourselves have been growing. We've hired another recruiter to come in and kind of fill some of the capacity that we need at this point. And actually accomplishing a lot of what we set out to do, you know, making pretty key critical hires for a number of companies across the landscape right now. So we've worked with Unchained actually here in the office right now. A really close partner of ours, made a couple key executive hires for them. We've worked with Paul over at Stackwork, a number of companies at this point where, yeah, we're averaging, I guess I'd say maybe two placements a month right now, which, in this condition right now, this bear market that we're still in from a hiring standpoint, I think it's a great cadence. But what excites me is actually seeing that continue to tick up. So coming into the back half of this year, I expect that volume to at least double, if not more. And that's just for the core service. So as you mentioned, we're in a world right now where that core service is still very valuable, still very in need. But as we've had conversations over the past, again, 5-6 months with clients, there's becoming more and more of an apparent opportunity to augment the classic full-time hiring model, right? And so that's where we're coming in, trying to offer something different at this point. And so with Flex, the program that we're offering and officially launching, I guess, today, it really is focused on, whatever you want to call it, contractors, advisors, fractional exec type work. But again, a flexible talent model that, again, will augment your full-time hiring strategy. It's not to say that one is more important than the other, but I think the best companies, the most successful companies, from today moving forward, will be the ones that use a good mix of the two. And how you blend it, how you mix that, obviously that's part of what we can do and consult with our clients and talk through that. But I think using both is going to be the right strategy moving forward.
Yeah. And so before we dive into like how people can use this, let's talk about like the Flex marketplace on like the supply side of talent. How are you guys building that out?
So on the supply side, I think in Bitcoin, we're actually pretty lucky that there are so many talented and passionate, folks trying to contribute to the space right now. So yeah, we've seen broadly the solopreneur, entrepreneurship, flex, gig work, whatever you want to call it, right? That's been kind of a growing trend for some time now. But again, I think it's an even stronger component in the Bitcoin community where there's folks who, proof of work, just coming in, contributing, doing great stuff, and kind of building a little bit of a reputation or brand for themselves without ever having had a full-time role, right? So we're able to capitalize on that. Folks who have done things we can point to. We had really successful endeavors with a number of Bitcoin companies, and now they're kind of populating this bench, if you will, that we have, where we can offer those services for even more clients at this point. So we're, in a way, that's kind of the offering, I guess, we have to the supply side. It's like, you've already set out to offer this on your own. We can help crowdsource a bit more of that demand, bring more opportunities from the client side to you while allowing you the opportunity to continue like empowering yourself, taking on as many roles, as many contracting opportunities as possible.
Yeah, and I think there's an important component of our skill sets and expertise and background in company building and being at former companies to be able to understand what is the right talent that we would want for our own flexible needs or at the Talent Co, or, you know, we've used this personally for our own businesses that we run separate, that you look at, you know, a need, and you're looking at the candidate side and recognizing that they have a certain skill set. And that's where, you know, part of the Bitcoin Talent Co, it's like the disparate expertise in the former kind of like traditional finance, tech, whatever it may be, legal, compliance. But then the other side, just being looking at the Bitcoin space for so long, and that mirrors where, you know, we provide value on the full-time placement, but then also an understanding who are the right flexible people versus going to a market like an Upwork and you're just kind of like bidding, and then there's no like standardization or understanding. It's not to say we fit the complete person, but we know the right types to then say, okay, here are these two like individuals that you might be interested
in. For sure. And to expand on that, to be clear about what's even offered on the service itself, it's not so much of a talent matching platform, you know, matching you with available, you know, part-time workers, whatever. It's actually a list of vetted, you know, Bitcoiners that we've talked to already. So there is a bit of a, there's a bit of a control over that supply side that we have actually in terms of the quality, in terms of like the legitimate work that's been done in the past, the resume, if you will, that we can point to and provide. So yeah, everyone that we would be offering to our clients within the Flex service offering are folks that we have talked to and built a relationship with, and we know that they can come in and execute and do the job you're looking for.
Yeah, and I'm personally excited about this because, one, we've used this at OnRamp, but I also think about just from like a Bitcoin fundamentals, like we're all here to like further a mission and help and empower, whether it's entrepreneurs or individuals in building businesses. And the reality is like we're in a bear market, and we've been in a bear market, and burn needs to be intentional. It needs to be thinking about how do you extend runway, and businesses still have in a bear market need to be built. But then there's like, do you need a full-time employee? Do you need support in,
we've got Kaylee on the mic in the background. We've got the happy hour starting soon.
Perks of the Commons, happy hour, bit block boom. But to that main point, it's that really excited because I think this actually helps Bitcoin businesses move further instead of like thinking through, you know, the example I always reference, but there's no shortage of them, is like open enrollment via an HR period where normally you have to make this decision. It's open and there's additional influx of things that the traditional person, somebody has to take on, whether it's a CEO, if it's a smaller firm, or a COO, or it's a whole role. And that person at a 50 to 80 person company is now like under the water because she has all her other, or he has all those other things that he needs to, you know, take care of. And then open enrollment takes more. And then now you have to make a decision. Do you hire somebody? Do you not? But you can actually bring somebody like that on. And that goes across any kind of like vertical, to be able to help, you know, basically execute and build while not having that upside or that overhead cost of bringing on a full-time employer.
Yeah. I mean, that's just one discipline to your point. Like whether it's an engineering sprint, right? You need capacity that would normally be 10 engineers to get this done in the next 3, 4, 5 months, but you don't need 10 engineers in perpetuity. You don't need them for the next 3 years. So thinking from a budgeting standpoint, if nothing else, how are you being efficient and intelligent with your labor costs? Looking at labor as a line item on your P&L, right? How are you optimizing and investing in the right way to get the exact work done that you need? I'll also say, I mean, Michael, you and I both come from worlds where we've seen in traditional tech kind of investing landscape, the like ingrained ideal of, oh, I've raised money, now go spend it all on hiring. Like headcount is actually, oddly enough, sometimes a more important metric for folks than revenue or profitability even, right? And that's just the world we've been living in for the past decade plus. I mean, that's crazy. That needs to change. And so we're helping to reframe that.
Yeah, no, and I think this is probably the most important topic we should dig into during this discussion. Michael, you and I talk about this a lot with this interest rate environment that we're living in, with the state of venture capital and the unmasking of zombie companies that are getting materially impacted by this rate environment, and really beginning to dig into their cost, particularly when it comes to labor and headcount. And I think this Flex program's really exciting because I think more and more, like you mentioned, Andy, people are beginning to realize that maybe headcount as a metric to pitch VCs isn't the wisest metric to go after. And so creating a calculated plan to build a team in a way that blends full-time employees with flex employees to actually get what you need built, done.
Yeah. And I'll say this too. I mean, the really interesting thing, the beneficial thing for us as we launch a program like this is the increase of interest on both supply and demand sides for something like this. So to be clear, what I mean by that is, yeah, yes, we're talking to our clients. They're more curious about leveraging flexible work. They see it as a way to be more efficient with their capital. Like, that's all positive. But the truth is that supply side is increasing too, right? And so there's more and more folks who are wanting to take on that individual responsibility and power themselves to have two, three engagements at any given time. There are folks who, living in any corner of the globe, who want to get paid in sats, right? This is obviously a perfect model for that, right? So we're seeing this, that the market is growing because both sides of the marketplace are actually growing exponentially right now. And so we just want to kind of help build some of the framework, help build some of the services to like connect the two, right? But we're kind of riding a wave right now in terms of trends that we're seeing right now.
Yeah. And I think there's two sides of where this ultimately, like, I think provides value for us and in the marketplace. And there's a side on, you know, for lack of better words, like the monkey's paw. Like, there's real value to be delivered from a firm, and it's not me. It's when I think of, like, you mentioned Alex Rockstar came over from Kraken. He's worked with the Unchained team directly and really helped in finding the key roles to build that business. And that is really valuable. And when you think about that, this area of the market he's targeting, where you need somebody that comes from, you know, traditional finance or whatever the job rec is, but then also understanding Bitcoin. But there's a natural apprehension from, and Andy knows this, from general like tech to like, do you pay? Like, what's the model? Like, I can figure this out myself. So there's a natural apprehension. And then we all know Bitcoiners, we want to do things independently. We want to, you know, be tight on the capital and rightfully so. And so there's this natural apprehension. It's like, well, maybe we can do it. Can you do it good? And it's like, so we have to figure out how do we like solve for that. And there's different ways we can explain it. We can work on the fee structure. But then one of the other ways that we've seen and I think will continue is that people will like limit the downside for, if you will, like in saying, well, let us help you with this smaller position. Like, let's help you with this thing that is less. So it's not as permanent. It could be permanent. It could find the right person, which is nice, right? You de-risk it from like, what is an actual hire? It's not just 100, 150K. It's really like whatever, 250, whatever the number is when you think about benefits, healthcare, change, you know, onboarding. And so I think it's a nice way to start to show the value that we know we can deliver. But then there's the other side, which we've seen getting on calls, is that like we do have really unique experience. Like we talk about this stuff. It's that we're sitting here, we're building other companies. We've been part of large organizations. We've seen operational expertise and best practices. That
and,
somebody
and the opposite we've seen
you've seen the yeah bad. You've seen the one yeah just it's actually just as important the things not to do why you don't like hire and that's the reality of what's happened. It's like it's all just this pattern recognition that's actually inherently false and biased. When somebody gives somebody money and then expects them to go hire a suite like this team, that's not true for every business. Like, they can rethink about how that works, and that's changing because of remote work. The dynamic of like 40-hour working, like what was that? Where did it stem from? Was it industrial, you know, revolution? Like from that side, industrialization.
Revolution.
Yeah. And industrial factory work.
Yeah. And so point being is that you take like this unique thing that we've seen as a like macro trend, but generally in most things, Bitcoiners are ahead of it. So they start saying, oh, well, this is an interesting way to like really be prudent and efficient with capital. But then they're also coming and saying, oh, well, like, you've seen some of this. So like, how do you think about it? Or like, how are you doing it? And it lets us provide this like advisory guidance, even in a roundabout way, whether they're seeking or not, like they may intentionally seek it, or it's just part of like, it's like, we care about a long-term relationship. That's how you build, you know, business. Yeah. So you have to give them the right way to think of like, do you really need this person? Or maybe you do need this person for full time, and how that works. So I think it's two sides. It helps us on the like core part of the business in the hiring and starting a relationship with companies. But then on the other side, for a company that's just starting, thinking, do you really need that full-time person? Maybe we have the right person for you for this next 6 months and where you need to get to before you go raise that capital, and you can de-risk that, which yeah. I don't think is done right now. And I think it's important.
And that's part of where it came from too. I don't want to say the idea for this. We're not reinventing the wheel, I'd say, but really packaging up in a pretty novel way, right? Where in having these conversations, doing due diligence with clients, you know, not just forcing them into signing an engagement to work on a role with us. We actually want to provide that advisory service to say, well, do you really need this? If you don't need this, if you don't need to work with us at all, like maybe that's the case. But maybe there's this middle ground where what you actually need, what I'm hearing you say, is you need a fractional CTO to help, you know, get you through the next 6 months. From there, you'll decide what your team looks like, your leadership team, et cetera. But there's this middle ground, right? And so that's where, again, yeah, the offering comes from.
Yeah, and I mean, and you can, this even gets meta too, because when you talk about hiring for companies, particularly earlier stage companies, like, do they actually need a recruiter in-house? Do they need like a people person in-house, or could you guys fill that role?
Exceptionally meta, but yes, we will provide ourselves on the Flex platform to some degree. But no, it's a great use case because yes, you 3-4 person founding team. Maybe you've hired another engineer, another designer, right? Like the really small core of individuals. And you need to scale from that point. But is your first hire a do-it-all HR leader, recruiter? Perhaps not, especially when there's a service like this who understands your space, understands the market, you know, and all its nuances, can help provide you from, you know, growing from 5 to 10 to 15 in a way that, you know, saves money in the long term on like salaries for recruiting teams, right? Because we talk about the sprint type work to get you from A to Z or whatever it may be, right? An HR leader, like, is probably not going to have the same hiring cadence always forever. Like, there will be ebbs and flows, there will be sprints, there will be growth periods, there'll be times of scaling back, appropriately so, responsibly so, when you're trying to conserve capital. So yeah, use us to be that arm, right, of your recruiting services, your outsourced recruiting services, till you get to a point where you don't need it, yeah, you know, for another however much time.
Yeah. I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but I think, what have you guys seen people doing wrong in terms of their hiring practices without obviously naming names?
I think the overhiring is a big thing. Yeah. Like, when you get the money and you assume, because I think what we're talking about ultimately, and I'm just speaking from experience from what we're doing at OnRamp, it's like, you just have to rethink. I guess the ultimate thing is like the cost of capital. And how do you efficiently do everything? Because a Bitcoin spent today is basically our cost. We talked about on one of the last pods, I don't know which one, but about like, what's the cost of capital? It's like, we don't actually know, like, so if you're going to lend it to somebody, but we know our own personal cost of capital. And so basically a BTC
or opportunity cost.
Yeah, opportunity cost. And so if you think about it from that lens, and this gets in my mind, the ultimate meta, it's like, well, if everybody's thinking like this, now you start to and we know everybody will think like this because this is what money does when you have a sound form of money. And so this is where the puck will go no matter what, if we're right about money, is that we like got away from it. So of course everybody just created, you know, crazy hires, and there's the whole headcount term about like, you always want more multiple people or size of a company, and it's a badge of honor. In reality, it's the least. It's like how efficient you and how much revenue you can generate with the least amount of people should have been the badge, because all those sats are going to you. And we think about, even like, again, in honor of like producing flow of capital is so foreign to people, like, because it's like, oh, well, if you're producing, then you're not reinvesting. It's like, well, you can do both. Like, you can actually have a sustainable business and go through. But then when you think about it in that way, you're also thinking about, well, then how much is like, what is my burn? And do I need these full-time individuals? And some you do, part of a company, and some maybe they can flex into a full-time role. And then some are just inherently like naturally not necessary. Like, I think about design. And design's a good example for multiple reasons, because I think where this ultimately trends is the designer ends up being a partner if he's full time, i.e. he ended with a real skin and equity, like 10% of a firm. Or if not, why would he be tied to one company? He can go make 3x the amount if he's good and go sit on a beach in Tulum or whatever he wants to do and have all the flexibility, or be 6 months out of the year with his family and then the other 6 months not be tied to it if that's what he wants to do. In the old world, didn't allow that. They want you in the office 9 to 5. Now they want you tied in. They have the tracking of the software and all of it. But the reality is, like, why would you do that if you are good at what you do? Like, yeah. Is that necessary? And if it is necessary and that's what you want to do, you're going to be like, well, I'm a partial owner in this firm. Like, because I'm contributing all of it. I want the upside through the dividends and not just the salary. So where this all ends is very interesting once, like, the money gets fixed, because it's just, like, rethinking of, like, how businesses are actually built and then what's your relationship with it. And you're either basically, like, and they talk about this in The Sovereign Individual, like, you're basically doing your task and you get paid, or you're going to like have real skin in the game. And I think we see like the flatter companies as well, where you're not going to see the craziness of like what Google.
And I mean, you touched again on the dynamic of the supply side increasing, right? More and more people are seeing this as a very viable, you know, way to work, a very viable way to earn, you know, spreading it out across multiple engagements. Right. So, I mean, this is continuing to happen. Like, we're seeing tailwinds on both fronts. Both supply and demand side, right, where this type of platform just makes more and more sense over time. And we haven't like framed it in this exact way, but something you said made me think, like, the truth is when companies try to burn that capital so fast, it's like they're operating in a fiat mindset. They're operating in like a hyperinflationary mindset, right? When you look at these, you know, if you're in Argentina, you get your dollars, you're spending them immediately because dinner will be more expensive than breakfast, right? Just on a cost basis standpoint, right? That's how fast things can happen. And so without realizing that that's what they were doing, like, VC backed companies would do that, you know, raise funds and burn it like it's losing its value overnight. And so again, we're, at least in this industry, already understanding that that's not the right way to operate. We're operating on a more of a you know, sound footing, right? And so being more mindful of how to make those investments, understanding that, especially if you're operating in your revenue is coming in Bitcoin, you're holding Bitcoin on your balance sheet, like that actually will be truly more meaningful next year than this year, right? So why spend the money on something you don't need today if you could be a little bit more conservative and then hire your team next year if it gets to that point?
Yeah, I mean, and this hits really close to home for me with TFTC particularly, because I'm going through this right now. I leverage Flex for our intern, Trevor. Shout out Trevor. I'm sure maybe you can clip this. He's running social and doing our clips. And I'm going through a redesign of the website right now, and I need a designer and a developer, but I only need them for 6 weeks. And like, so I'm actually experiencing this right now. We're a bootstrapped company. Like I can only pay so much. Like we get the ad revenue, the sats flows, and I have to really look at the balance sheet and make tough decisions. Like, how do I allocate capital? It's me, Logan, and the intern. And then I do want to make the business better. And so I found a situation where I can tap into a designer and a developer for 6 weeks to do a sprint for our website. Yeah. And it's perfect. I don't have to hire a full-time CTO or designer.
I'm glad to hear that you're a happy customer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, like, get away from like constraints breed creativity. Like, you ultimately want to have that, especially if you want to own your business, because you could go raise money. You could probably go raise money. You know, plenty of people that say like, hey, I want to build a business. But then like, if you hire all of it and then it doesn't necessarily work out exactly as planned, well, now you just gave away 10% to figure that out. Was it really necessary? And to your point, it's like the growth at all costs is the fiat mindset, because we're starting to feel this, because now there's a cost of capital with fiat that's higher than it historically has been the past 20, you know, roughly 20 years. But it's the top line revenue that's the focus, not the bottom line. So that's how all these people got in trouble. I remember it like specifically, I've never talked about this out loud, but you may know this, like at WeWork.
Where did we work? Uber and WeWork?
At WeWork, it was like insane. They would give away the desk. Like the desk was the metric. So like the number of desks that were sold. And so you do big like multi-million dollar enterprise deals and you're selling, you know, 200 desks in a building. Maybe it's 250, I don't know. But you give away the desk like half off or 6 months free because you got the desk sold. Like this was part of it. So this is how like from
you're able to put that in your metric.
Like, you put it in the metric filled. Because then you're growing the top line, and then you go and you go back to SoftBank and you're like, okay, well now we're month over month, year over year getting the growth. And this is, you know, I don't know how there, we can probably roundabout say this has led to the downfall, but it exactly led to the downfall of BlockFi, because the dirty secret, and it's public, is that BlockFi was all about growing that top line revenue. And so they needed to, before they would, to raise more capital to basically keep the Ponzi alive. And it's funny because if you see a lot of these firms before they fall out, I know BlockFi, and there was another one almost raised at like crazy valuations, wouldn't be able to fill the hole. But then little things happen. So BlockFi, right before they, you know, went down, they were about to raise it like a $10 billion valuation. I think FTX too, right? They were in the market. And what happens is the market, you know, they were doing these loans, but they needed the balance sheet. They needed the loans extended. The top line revenue of, it was like hundreds of millions of dollars in top line year over year revenue. And they didn't close the positions on the loans because it would have meant they would have to take them off the books. And so they didn't. So they, when they got margin called, or when they personally were margin called, they were, I guess, got told. This is documented somewhere. I don't remember where, but it's like public, that they didn't close out the positions. And so that's how you end up in the hole. Because if you think about risk management, like once you're in a certain position, you close it out, you cut it.
And you're doubling down.
Yeah, you're doubling down because you didn't want to close out from like you needed to go raise the money. So it's like, it really is, when we talk about Darwinistic law, it's like you really need to think through these things because if, you know, company, like money is the blood and you need it to be running. And if you run out of blood, you're not alive anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Uber. Shout out to Uber, first quarter ever. Recording a profit. when was Uber founded? Like 12 years ago?
2009, yeah. I'd say. I joined in 2014. Yeah.
Travis would have been a user of this, not Dara.
Mm. Yeah. That's a whole other pod.
Yeah, but we're like, what are some of like the hiring mistakes that led to like crazy burn, literally taking them 14 years to get to profitability?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not just hiring practices that, you know, took them away from profitability. It was the business model itself and how it operated. But there were definitely mistakes on the hiring front. I mean, it was very much that mindset of, we raised, I mean, goodness, like probably more funding than any company had ever raised, billions, several billion dollars in total funding. Like, what are we going to spend it on? Hire more teams. And over the long term, it turned into not just like over hiring for each discipline. It turned into hiring like orgs functions altogether that were probably not as needed. I mean, this is probably the case across a lot of tech today, right? But that's a whole nother story, right? So I think it just opened my eyes. In the time that I was there, the 4 years that I was there, right, I saw a lot of unnecessary activity. I saw a lot of, like, even in the day-to-day recruiter activity, right? When you find yourselves not having work to do, you're pivoting to do, we would call it foundational type work. Let's rework our interview playbooks. Like, again, maybe important work, but it was an excuse because we didn't actually have hiring to do, right? In that time, thankfully, you know, for me and, you know, my career, like, I still had a job through that. But we've seen more recently, you know, as conditions have gotten worse, those recruiters in those situations no longer pivot to foundational work. They just get cut, right? And so we haven't touched on this much yet, but the whole, you know, deluge of layoffs, the several rounds of layoffs throughout the past couple of years, like that's kind of been an unfortunate learning lesson for a lot of companies too. Like, we've had to feel that pain to now be like, oh shit, maybe I shouldn't have hired so much, right? And so I don't want to say that I'm glad this has happened. I'm definitely not. I still have tons of friends and colleagues who've gone through this, and yeah, you know, some are still looking, right? It's very, very painful out there, right? But it's been the eye opener that a lot of companies need to finally realize, like, oh, maybe I should have been a little more conservative, right? Maybe I should have been a little more thoughtful around not just my hiring plans, but just how I allocate capital across the organization broadly.
Yeah. No, and I think the launch of Flex is, you guys should get a lot of credit for being pragmatic and, like, seeing what the market's telling you. Because I remember we wanted to talk about this chart on the last trade last week, but I'm not sure if we were able to bring it up, but you should. You had that chart of, like, the job openings at, like, all the big companies, and they cratered year on year.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, I don't know. I was thinking about this. Like, I don't know exactly. There's multiple things happening. Like, at the very highest level, the companies like Google, specifically like a Google, Facebook, they're more of like aggregators for simple, like, competitive reasons. Like, they just hire people just because they don't want you out of the market.
Take them off the market.
Yeah, take them off the market.
Yeah.
And then there's this next level that hired people either because they thought they needed to, and they ultimately, like, when the market kind of falls in like, the, you know, if they're publicly traded, then they're looking at the bottom line and you're concerned, okay, like, well, what, you know, now you're getting pressure. So now that's layoffs. And we saw, like, Twitter is a good example of, like,
75%, was it?
80.
It was 80?
80%.
Yeah. What made me think, it's insane. But
what was everybody doing?
What made me think about this is, I think it was in the Bitcoin Standard. And there's somewhere else that was talked about, but like that when you, the misallocation of resources, right? You send the negative, the interest rate, it sends a false signal. You go build the things, they never get completed. And I remember during this in WeWork reading the Bitcoin Standard while we were doing it, and there's all these buildings that never got completed because the money was out there, but then the demand never fills. And so you have people out there working and doing construction jobs and all these things. But, like, this is another example.
It's where, here in Austin. Facebook backed out.
Yeah, the buildings, but then also the companies, because these people went and got jobs. And I remember this. It was very transformative. It was when I moved to New York and I was working at WeWork, and I was like, this is insane. Like, there was a disconnect from the person that was producing value, because there was, now you start hiring. Because when the money starts in the headcount, now you're not really hiring, like, the people to get the job and increase the bottom line. It just turns into this whole, like, you know, it's like an amalgamation of, like, you're just pulling people in because you like them or whatever. And now you're sitting there, and then it's just like, it kills a company's culture, because now you're looking at it and there's, like, this nepotism or this, like, angle versus the standard of, like, value that somebody's coming in. But all these people are sitting at these companies, and you talk about the TikTok shows of, like, the girl that's in the product manager. In their heads, they believe they're, like, very valuable.
Doing great work.
They're doing great work. And it sent this, like, false signal to so many people that are employed at these companies that they're, like, very special, or they're really producing. And then they get out in the free market, and it's going to be fucking crazy, because you're just like, I got to go work at Starbucks to produce, or I don't eat. Like, it's, and everybody's going to have to get, like, their, it's going to be a weird change. Like, it's going to be psychologically, you have to either
in a weird way, this
retrained.
What this means for Flex, though, it's like there is going to be a lot of, again, it's just going to hurt. Like, people who are not as employable anymore, the TikToking product managers, like, what value are they producing, right? But when people finally see the solopreneurship, you know, even, like, we have, like, agencies that are on the Flex platform too. Like, so people have already kind of taken that step to create, like, a solopreneurship shop, or even, like, you know, two or three folks together. But again, our ability to, like, crowdsource more demand for them is why they want to work with us, right? So we're already seeing, like, people move that direction. And the point to make is that, you know, the cream will rise to the top in terms of, like, the really talented folks who are, they finally see this is the right way to go, how they want to contribute, how they want to, like, offer their skill set to companies. And the best ones will be the ones that, that get the job opportunities, right? So we're curating that list, I think, of like the best contributors to the Bitcoin landscape, you can say, over the past several years.
That reminds me, I have an email intro for you that we talked about earlier this week on the agency side of things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, but it is. It's weird because it's a very tumultuous time. A lot of stress out there, a lot of pressure. But pressure does tend to create diamonds. And while it may be stressful and a bit unnerving for many people, like, I do think this is a very important lesson for humanity to learn. Like, we have been living in clown world for some time. Like, it's not the way the world's supposed to work.
Gary from last week's Last Trade episode, awesome guy. He had this comment because we get on these like tracks. It was on Archar that we got on one of these of just like maybe a little like negative or, you know, but he was at the very end and this guy's, he's like, this has all happened before and there's a way to play it and you can benefit or you can't benefit. And there's money to be made and there's money to be lost. And which side are you on? And so when I think about like something like this and to your point about pressure, it's like, you look at the market needs this, the market businesses have to grow. They're going to be more thoughtful about it. There's going to be a cost now and in the future with Bitcoin's money. And then on the other side of it for them, it's like, well, it's going to be, could be the difference. If, do you need that five people that pay $200,000 a year? Do you need to pay two people for $100,000 or whatever the number is? And then two other people at $25,000 to handle your accounting versus having a CFO or a fractional CFO, whatever it looks like. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's the opportunities there on both sides to provide services. And like we talk about what's going on in the macro environment, but the other side of it, it's like that just, you know, there's still money. There's still things being produced. It's just who's there going to pick it up.
Yeah. It'll be very important for companies to realize the shift is happening. They should realize it's happening if they don't already and then act quickly to recalibrate to, like you said, they need to continue building their businesses and they just need to be smarter about it. And so it's acting with a sense of urgency.
I think so.
Yeah. And I think none of this is revolutionary, but what happens is the times change. So the point that we're in right now is different in the sense that now somebody that ultimately would have had one job now is on the market. Can do three like that. I fundamentally believe
it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think it depends There's on the circumstances. I think it depends on the circumstance because, like, the design is a good example. So designers, at least, and maybe I'm way off base, but, like, for what I've seen, the market is, like, I don't know how many companies actually need a full-time designer, depending on what they need, where if somebody's really good, and this is actually goes across, forget about design, it's actually, like, an employee standpoint. I've always seen it, and this is at companies, it's more Pareto distributed in the sense that there's 20% of people doing all the work, and there's 80% of people that are just, like, kind of there filling the void. And if the person decides that they want to make more money by going out to the market and providing services and they can expand their like range of it, they don't need a 9-to-5. Like, you know this, you're probably a good example of this, that you could do a bunch of stuff for a bunch of different people and get it done. That somebody would have been a full-time job in that thing.
I mean,
right.
On ramp, Last Trade, perfect example.
Yeah. I mean, so, but like that example exists in that, it just changes the dynamic of like, now you have good people out there. They can make the money. They can provide the service for the firm that would have ordinarily had to hire the full time. They can benefit. The other person can benefit. But that wouldn't have existed if you had to be in a desk full time and you didn't have the internet and you didn't have mobile and you didn't have like people thinking this way on the opportunity cost. So that's why it's so interesting or fun to talk about, because I think this changes how businesses are built, how people work. And it's not that we're like, it's just it's like investing. When you invest, you're looking at it and you're looking at different variables. And one of the variables is like, what changes now? What is the trend or what is the thing why this would have worked now and it didn't work before? And that, and this is why this is so interesting, is because like this unique exact moment is the moment it's needed and would work.
Well, to this point too, and to your point, Andy, about the fine line, because that was a big trend during COVID lockdowns, was the engineers who were taking on like 3-to-5 roles. Yeah. And they were doing that because some of them were actually like producing for each company, but others were just like taking advantage of the free money flow that was creating these job openings that really didn't need to exist.
Yeah. So what I would say is that people can and will be doing multiple engagements, multiple clients, right? But it's all, there needs to be a little more transparency, a little more like, it's just, you got to be a good person, right? You're not going to take full-time engagements and have three full-time ones, right? Where the work itself is in conflict with one another. There's no conflict of interest, right? In terms of the types of products you're building, like that would always be part of it, right? But for the most part, we talk about, you know, some of the best individuals who want to get into solopreneurship. It's also because they're incredibly efficient with their work. And so that will be seen, right? Where, you know, you should be paying for the output, not for hours, right? And so that's how we would package this up too. It's a project, it's a fixed engagement based on the deliverable, the product. If John can do it in 20 hours, but Sally can do it in 10, like, great. Sally will get this job, but then she'll fill those other 10 hours with something else, you know?
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction that will be part of a process and its nuance of understanding if there's ever a conflict. But there's the other side of somebody being able to do, you know, think of taxes or something. If they can help 10 people or three, like, what difference does it make to me if they can do it, as long as there's discretion and all of the things that you would want, because that person efficiently can do that. And if you benefit because your cost is lower, and that guy benefits because his over bottom line is increased because of the output, and instead of working at a company where he just gets basically, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Joe Woods here from Satoshi Pacchioli. He's my accountant. That's another thing too. Like, Logan's a full-time employee. Trevor is full-time. Only two full-time employees outside of myself, and then outsource the design and development of the site relaunch, and then I have a bookkeeper. I pay a nominal fee, an hourly fee for his services, which aren't expensive at all. And then I use Joe for the accounting services. And for my small company, I run a small business. It's a small operation, but like, that's how I've gotten creative to ensure that I don't have like a crazy burn rate.
Sure. We can go back to one of the very first examples for us internally before we even thought about Flex was our designer, right? We've been going back, if you remember the Twitter contest mm-hmm. we did, we launched a... kind of crowdsourced our brand book, our design guidelines, all of that, right? Right back when we first started. Individual, David from Kaduna, Nigeria, won that contest. And so we paid him in sats for that project alone. Like, that was, you know, that was that. But because of the great work he did on that logo design effort, we've continued to work with him for website efforts, for ongoing design, collateral, marketing collateral, things like that. And so he essentially has been a Flex candidate for us, and we've been using it ourselves, right? And I guarantee you, we'd love to offer him for others just because of how valuable he's been for us. So, yeah, we kind of saw the need internally without even realizing it too.
Well, that actually brings up a good point. Like, what does this do for pricing for talent if you open the Flex up to like a global supply side of talent?
Yeah, more opportunities for global talent to compete, right? Yeah. Obviously, they can definitely compete on price. My one thing, I'll always push back on, like, yeah, the price equilibrium, if you will, should never succumb all the way to the lowest, you know, denominator at this point.
Should pay people well. It should bring where they are.
Yeah, it should bring people in, and you know, other markets. Yeah, you know, the global South. I hate that term, but
same. I do too. We debate about this.
Well, I grew up in the American South. And I'm like, why is that always like a derogatory thing?
Like, there's a hierarchical connotation with it.
I don't like it. Yeah, but it's.
I think we won the global South thing because Matt heard him. I don't know, recently it was emerging market.
Let's go back to emerging markets. Yeah.
That works. It's pretty PC, right? but yeah, folks in those regions will, you know, like David and many others like him, super talented. There's no difference between the output, between the quality of the work, right? And so I'm actually very passionate about unlocking that opportunity for folks. Yes, there's a cost saving for businesses, but it's more just about spreading what we're trying to do globally, right?
Yeah, Bitcoin, and then obviously like Bitcoin opens this up, because you have a borderless form of money. But then we were talking about it, you know, we talked about the last episode of Zaprite. It's like a great example to use Zaprite to funnel a lot of the stuff too, on invoicing and managing all that and letting you how you want to get paid. Some people want Bitcoin. Maybe others want to pay in Bitcoin. Maybe others want to offer discounts or get paid, you know, via Stripe invoice. So ideally we can figure out a way to partner or just use Zaprite.
Yeah,
help our friends over there too.
Definitely. And I'll say this too. So in launching this today, the service offering is there. We're able to work with companies to offer this flexible talent, but this is just step one. This phase one, if you will. There is a world we continue to really platformize, if you will, productize this type of service offering to include invoicing, billing, payments over Bitcoin, over Lightning, etc., things like that. So there's a lot of really interesting kind of developments we can make from this point moving forward. But step one is just, you know, letting the market know that this service is available to start, right? And we can start doing that more on a kind of ad hoc basis.
Yeah, that's one thing I've been extremely impressed with the two of you and the team that you've built is Bitcoin Talent Co. recruiting firm first, iterating with Flex, but you guys have much bigger aspirations for what you're doing. And I think you're applying a lot of the principles that we're talking about today, like, correctly to your business. Like, hey, let's just go at the pace we need to get our client base and then iterate from there and add value-added services on top of that.
And along the way, finding out what people actually need from us. Like, we'll offer something And when we started, we thought recruiting services would be valuable. We were right. Right. But it was still just like our first stab out there. And now that we've got these relationships, we're continuing to build the trust and the brand and things like that. We do so by listening to our customers. Right.
Yeah. What do you listen for?
Pain points, problems, statements that are actually hidden questions. Right. And there's a lot of things. I mean, yeah, we can pull out a ton of them. This is a great example of that, though, where it's like, do I need to hire this? Do I want to hire that? And they see it through the lens of like, do I want to pay recruiting fees for this role? It's like, no, let's reframe that, right? Yeah, maybe you don't. I will be the first to tell you, like, yes, we would make money if you said yes to this, but that's actually not what you need. That's not what's going to allow us to build a long-term relationship with you too. So how else can we get you the talent you need for the exact output you're looking for, and then go from there?
Yeah. Long-term, let's go 5 years down the road. What do you think? Let's pump the Bitcoin Talent Co. vision. Like, what do you think, like, you guys could help unlock for this industry? Like, do you think you could accelerate the build out of these critical companies and services and tools?
Certainly, right? But how do we do that, right? And so I think, yeah, the overarching, like, loose 5-year goal at this point, it is to be the entire, like, talent operating system, if you will, for the Bitcoin ecosystem. And then, you know, we can kind of say the meme, as every company becomes a Bitcoin company, like, we truly have visions of this being a service and a platform and a product that'll be used more broadly, right? Everyone will start to adopt Bitcoin principles. Everyone will start to adopt the Bitcoin itself, right? As companies outside of our ecosystem today. And given what we've been able to do from here to then, you know, building the expertise, the specialties, building a platform and a product that has been so valuable to this one ecosystem, it'll then go more broadly than that, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can kind of go in how... So in the support of a firm, like, you think about when you start and you raise capital and then you hire folks and then you have to manage, you know, there's no shortage of these like products. There's like, what is it? Gusto, Rippling, you know, you need to onboard and figure out how do you like actually do, you know, social security and all the things for your employee and payroll and, medical, like just all the things associated. And then you have to figure that out if you're a brand new employee. What if somebody can do that out of the box that you can trust and understand your size? Yeah. And then that gets interesting because it's like, well, then if you're starting that early, well, then like, well, how much of that is needed to be full time versus fractional? Maybe you flex into something like that. But then ultimately thinking through a partner of like, how do you build a company? Then what do you actually need when you like, if you think about it, if we're repaving, like what is a full time, and not us, but just the market will ultimately like converge on this because I think it ends up just being the most efficient way to build a firm is that then you like start thinking, well, what are the people I need early to be full-time? What are the people I need part-time? How does it increase the amount of revenue? How does it increase the amount of like equity I get to keep because I don't need to bring on that money, which ultimately is going to be where people get back to because that equity in the dividend cash flow is who they own the business. And so that whole like thing, then you start, it actually matters these offerings. And it's like, and then it's like, you're looking at it from the moat or the angle is how do you actually, you know how to build a business, yeah. Like from an agnostic perspective, like forget about if it's like an oil and gas or whatever the company is, like, you know, just like that you start having individual expertise of like the hiring, but then the certain areas of the market. And then if you actually get even more specialized and can know certain pieces of their market, so you can do like an oil and gas, traditional financial services, and you can even get more specific. And then to Andy's point about like the matching people, it's like right now you're doing it, we're doing it like this, you know, yeah, real time. But then as you calibrate that, then you can start understanding, well, what does the person need? And then how do you match that? And I honestly think that like, we are very bad as individuals at knowing what we should be doing, like in employment. Like we have an idea, but then because the world told you, but then it's completely different. I'm an example of this, like when Parker and me, you know, got knowing and I left and joined Unchained, it ended up being the perfect role for me, but I had no idea. He had no idea. We just took it, but it was like, because I wasn't from traditional finance, and you can't have somebody from traditional finance like doing this stuff because you're just thinking about it in the old way. And in the same way, a company doesn't know what they need because they haven't like, you know, two lenses.
Well, that's one thing I struggle with at TFTC is I don't know how to interview people. I know what I need built. I don't know exactly what I need. Like I need help with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's harder to scale, but that's part of obviously the advisory, the coaching that we can bring to companies, right? It's something as simple as like, let's first of all just align on a single rubric. Every candidate should go through the same questions. They should go through the same grading, so to speak, right? I mean, it sounds simple when I say it out loud, but there is that coaching that's required to make sure that we're running an efficient process.
Yeah, my wife has seen me interview people on Zoom in our kitchen, and we hang up the call. She's like, "That's the worst interview. Like, you don't know how to interview people." Like,
well, what you got to do is you.
I just like producing I just like going. Like, I don't know, like, yeah, but it comes down to, like, strategy of, like, what do I need to ask these people? How do I find and sort of eke out, like, if I can understand that this person can produce what I need?
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
That's why we have jobs. You made the comment earlier talking about some of the HR tech platforms. Like, listen, it may sound silly to sit here and say, like, we're, you know, 5 years from now, what we're doing, we're going to be the next Gusto, the next Deal, the next Rippling, whatever. Yeah, sounds very lofty, but I think there is something to be said for the small fact that of all those HR tech platforms, they all entered the space in different ways. Like Gusto was payroll first, Rippling was HRIS broadly, you know, Deal was employee of record, right? They all had their starting point and that have all kind of expanded. We're really one of the first ones, with our product ideas at least, to be starting from a recruiting, like talent standpoint, right? ATSs, as we know them today, have always stayed as ATSs. We haven't seen that like expansion. So there's that point that's interesting to think about our future. And then the second one, we're the only one doing it on a Bitcoin standard today, right? So I think that the way we're building this business and the unique types of services and offerings we're offering to just our small community today, but as we expect will be, you know, adopted more broadly, I think that'll give us some muscle and give us some expertise that other players won't have as we continue to expand into a product offering.
Yeah. And so Flex is out there. She's in the wild. What should companies do if they want to learn more about it? Get involved.
So we do have a landing page within our website now, but bitcointalent.co/flex, FLEX. You'll find information there. If a company is looking to leverage these services, there's a questionnaire there. You can reach out to us. But yeah, you know, find us there.
Yeah. This is a happy hour that you guys are co-sponsoring, so I feel like we should get out there. Michael, do you have any last parting thoughts before? I'll throw it to both of you. Any parting thoughts?
No, I think Andy hit it, you know, reach out. Happy to have conversations. It's been fun. I think we've probably talked to almost every Bitcoin company, and heard feedback and where they're at. And so it's nice to share like our learnings, and whether it's working with, you know, a firm now in the future, knowing what they're looking for and being able to even like the amount of people that we have in the Rolodex, whether it's because of our network or that have come inbound. Like, even if it doesn't, we don't have an engagement. It's just, this is part of just being a Bitcoiner and doing the right thing. It's like, here, there's a guy that's interesting for this position. You should talk to him, because ultimately, if we're all in this together, like, we're going to end up doing business together, because when the market comes back, people have to hire still. Even all the things we just said, they still need to fill the roles to build the businesses. And that's the idea, is that, like I was sharing with Andy, it's like, this is the hardest actual time for this business will ever be because of where we're at. And if you can produce cash flow, which we are, and be profitable, everything else is going to be great because the market's going to come back, the capital's going to come back, the things need to be built, and then there's nobody doing this or understands both sides of the market of like traditional tech and then Bitcoin. So
yeah,
I mean, I'll echo all that and then just say, yeah, the looking back on this journey, it was a short journey, 5 months, you know, from then to now, just how fortunate I feel, how we feel as a team for some of the early partnerships we built with some great companies in the space. You know, like Michael said, we've already been doing the work we set out to do. We are generating revenue. We are profitable. It's a hard thing in this market, right? But it is all due to our clients who have trusted us, right, and allowed us to continue to work on their roles for them. I'm excited with another service offering to be able to continue to expand on that and provide even more value, help support companies who maybe didn't even need to use the core service originally, but will now find value in this. So, yeah, it's the second of what will be many, I think, offerings under the Bitcoin Talent Co. umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
Before we wrap up... So when are you moving to Texas? Like, share a little bit about your experience so far since you got off your flight and what happened yesterday.
Yeah, you guys.
Yeah, you got to flash the boots. The camera can't see your boots.
Oh,
yet.
Oh man. Thank God. You guys know I love this city. I've been here a couple times now over the years. Starting with my bachelor party, actually in 2015 was my first trip to Austin, but. Yeah, we've got deep roots on the West Coast. There's a lot of things keeping us there right now.
Yeah, you really put them on the spot here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was
there's
just...
a lot of people going to listen to this.
Well, so the reason why I asked was because when Andy came in, he was referencing that there was these beautiful boots at Tecovas. They were just fantastic.
Black lizard boots. They were tuxedo boots. I call them.
I've heard a lot of reasons why somebody should leave California, and they've had problems in these states.
Well, but so Andy, if we're going to list, the reason you're referring to is lizard cannot be shipped to California, but that's probably reason 37, 38, I would say.
If my state didn't allow cowboy boots to be shipped in, I'd have to leave immediately.
upon hearing it's all about supporting the native Californian lizards and the boots they can make.
I heard Texas has better lizards than California.
Can't ship lizard boots to California, apparently. We learned that today.
Michael's been putting the hard press on. It'll continue. Well, maybe two or three more podcasts later.
And just avoid Parker out there if you're looking to avoid a hard press. Gentlemen, you guys are crushing it. I feel very fortunate to be an advisor of what you guys are doing and have like some insight. And I think it's extremely valuable. And I think, as you said, you're already driving value to companies, and that's only going to increase from here. So keep crushing it. Like, I think the way you're approaching this is extremely smart and will be beneficial for everybody involved, not just you, but the companies as well.
Yeah, appreciate it. Seeing the vision from early on and supporting.
Yeah. All right. Let's go enjoy the happy hour you guys are co-sponsoring.
Let's go.
Peace and love. Peace.